Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome. It's nice to see a lot of familiar faces and some new faces. So thanks for coming today. Today is Thursday, March 16th, 2023. This is the AMAX Technical Advisory Committee. It's 1:30 p.m. And our call of order, do we have a quorum?
Yes, we do.
Very good. Moving on to item two, meeting minutes from the January 19th, 2023 meeting. A motion is required. I have a motion.
Bowling second.
All right, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor of approving the meeting minutes, which are attachment 2A, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Moving on to item three, staff reports. 3A, financial progress report. Reference attachment 3A, Mr. Baker.
All right, thank you very much. As you can see, that we've spent about 40% of the budget through February. We're in good fiscal shape. We're going to start eating into that soon with a couple other projects, but I'd be happy to answer any questions if there are any.
All right, I see no questions, so a motion is required. Do I have a motion?
Bowling, move to approve.
Do I have a second?
We second.
I have a motion and a second. All those in favor of approving the financial progress report signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Item 3B, technical progress report, Mr. Baker.
All right, thank you again, Mr. Chairman. So first, I'd just like to remind everyone that our public meeting for the Transportation Improvement Program 2024-27 is tonight in partnership with our regular CIC meetings. If you are interested in attending, God bless you. And said the quiet part loud. No. If you are interested in attending, we have a link to our Zoom meeting. You're welcome to just let one of us know in the next few hours if you are interested in attending that meeting. But we will be going over a lot of the same stuff you'll see today. So that's, but that's part of this process of approving our TIP. Secondly, I'm going to get a little bit into, or a little bit out of my zone. I want to talk a little bit about what's called the Climate Pollution Reduction Grant. And so I don't know if any of you are familiar with this, but EPA announced as part of the, the Inflation Reduction?
IRA.
Yeah, IRA, the IRA bill. They created a Climate Pollution Reduction Grant, and obviously Sam, who's our ARACMID representative, could also speak on this, but it's important for us just because one is that it creates a program that has their funding planning grants for the 67 largest MSAs, metropolitan statistical areas, in the country. Akron is the 83rd largest MSA, so we're outside of that group. But what they're going to do is it's one of those things where they just give the give the MSA the money, they do a climate action plan, and then that opens them up, similar to like our Safe Streets for All program, it opens them up to over $4 billion in EPA money for either resiliency projects or basically carbon reduction projects. So things I believe could be eligible would include like fleet replacement to electric vehicles. Definitely, probably more stuff on public service side than on the AMAT side. But the reason I bring this to you guys today was that the city of Akron is expressing interest, and AMAT is not the right body to move forward with this, but the city of Akron is pushing forward, and what they were interested in and asked us to help get the word out was that if there are other communities in the area that are interested in being coordinating partners with Akron's requests, they would like to know, and they'd like to include those folks to participate in that. So what that really means is they're going to do the application, and you know, you guys could jump onto it if you wanted to. If you're interested in that, please let me know or let Sam know. It is one of those programs that, you know, it opens up a lot of dollars, but we also know as a region that, you know, the climate change issue is one that we've got a lot of different voices on and different, you know, thoughts on how the best to approach that issue. So For our sake, and I think even for Akron, they wanted to just say, hey, is anybody interested in going along with us in this? Because it does appear that there's more power in the program if you have more partnerships involved. So if you're interested within the next week or two, please, again, let me know, and I can pass your information on to the folks at the mayor's office in the city of Akron that are looking to do that. But like I said, the big thing is it's another $4 billion out there that's eligible for projects. So with that, I like I said, I don't have a lot of answers, but I'd be happy to answer any questions if there are any.
Curtis, we were contacted also, and if I understand correctly, the interest for the city is if certain MSAs that are ranked higher don't participate, and so they go down the list.
So every state can ask for $3 million to do a state plan, and the 67 largest MSAs are all you have to do is submit and say, yes, we want the money. But the thought is that there's going to be maybe up to 20 to 30 states that are going to say no, you know, just from like a political reason, they don't want to do the climate action plan. That money then gets distributed through to additional MSAs. So like us being 83rd would actually probably position us in a fairly good spot to do this. Now, the climate action plan itself, my understanding is it's a lot of what would you say, Sam, like catalog, like kind of just
greenhouse gas emissions.
Yeah, and figuring out like where it's coming from. And I think, Sam, you could speak to, it is like a lot of the greenhouse gases that aren't traffic related are primarily located in Akron, more so than in our suburban communities. However, you know, like we said, it could be an opening to communities to be able to do some things maybe from a public service side or resiliency side that would leave some potential. And as I will say, AMATS is trying to digest this. It's probably just, you know, 5 days before we're telling you now. So it's something that it came out very quickly, and the response time, I believe, is the end of March.
So the proposal came out March 1st.
Mm-hmm.
The states have until March 28th to declare whether they're going to participate or not. If they don't, then the funding for that state gets allocated to the top three MSAs in their state. If they don't take it, or if they're on the top 67, that bumps the bottom down. So it all works out okay. We have, as an MSA, I think it's the end of April to submit our letter of intent to apply. So
there is a little bit of time, but not before our next meeting kind of time.
Right.
So.
And then the plan, there's a preliminary action plan that would be due in 24. The complete climate action plan the complete climate action plan in 25, and then they would start looking at competitively funding the $4.6 billion for implementation.
Thank you, Sam. And so I think it's just food for thought. Let us know. We're just helping be that conduit to helping connect partners at a regional level for this. Questions?
So, Curtis, I think Summit County would just like more information.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Is there a match? Do you know?
No.
Yeah.
No match.
No match. Now, I don't know if that's true for the implementation side. Do you know that?
They haven't said yet. Yeah, they didn't say that.
And I don't believe there's like an official list of eligible projects at this point as well. So we're kind of making some assumptions on what type of projects would be eligible.
Yeah, we appreciate the opportunity to put it out to the group here, because it's eligible for local air agencies, which we serve some of the Dine and Portage County, so it's us either way, and also local municipalities could be the lead organization. So we appreciate everybody being here. It makes it easier rather than a bunch of emails going back and forth.
Any other questions? Great, that'll wrap up that side.
Thank you. Item 3C on the agenda is the AMATS Federal Funds Report. Mr. Pillay.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple things I'd like to touch on. First of all, the AMATS, our funding categories were in pretty good shape. We're slightly over budgeted in STBG, and then we're slightly, I guess, under budgeted in TASA and CMAC. We have, we're quickly approaching the end of the third quarter, couple weeks left in the third quarter, and we'll soon be into the fourth quarter of fiscal year 23. We currently have 15 STBG projects left to sell. And the once again, reminders, the fourth quarter is usually a shorter than normal quarter because ODOT doesn't do too much in the month of June because they're doing their year-end stuff. So hopefully everything will sell that's supposed to, and if there's any issues, let us know. We'd be glad to help you. The carbon reduction program is still on our radar. We have to, that's a new funding category that we have. We currently have about $2.5 million in it, and in fiscal year 24, there'll be an additional $1.3 million added to it, so that'll bump that up to nearly $4 million will be available. What AMANS plans to do is we plan to put together an application similar. It'll be similar to the CMAC application, but a lot simpler. From what we understand, these funds need to go toward projects that reduce emissions, and they're kind of, you know, they're not being real specific about types of projects, but I think pretty much any project that would qualify for, like a CMAC project would qualify for this. But we'll keep you posted when that application, we're going to work with the TAC TIP to put it together, and we'll keep you posted when that application is ready, and when we'll make sure everybody has the opportunity to apply who wants to. And other than that, that's all that I have for the federal funds report. If there's any questions, I'd be glad to take them.
All right. Thank you, Dave. Item four, old business.
I have none.
Moving on to item five, new business. Item 5A, presentation of the draft fiscal year 24-27 Transportation Improvement Program. Reference attachment 5A, Mr. Pillay.
Okay, thank you. Well, it's finally that time again that we put together a new Transportation Improvement Program. Just a minute, please. I accidentally have the wrong, I have a couple different TIP presentations, and I accidentally pulled up the wrong one. Okay, the fiscal year 2024-27 Transportation Improvement Program, the draft of this document is completed. Just to review what a TIP is, a Transportation Improvement Program is a document that shows the next 4 years of federal spending, infrastructure spending in the greater Akron area. Projects that receive federal money must be in this document if the funds are to be utilized. It's also a good way, because we are a regional agency, it's a good way to coordinate projects between jurisdictions and transportation agencies, although sometimes it doesn't seem like that happens, but it still is a tool that can be used to do that. And it's also a source of information to the public, so the public can stay on top of what's happening with the transportation infrastructure in the area. The things that are in the TIP probably most importantly, at least from your perspective, is highway, bicycle, pedestrian projects. That's table 2-3 and 2-4 in the most recent TIP. Also, transit projects, fiscal analyses, air quality analyses, any project that increases capacity, any capacity adding project has to be analyzed for air quality effects, environmental justice, performance measures, and public input. The TIP gets funding sources from three basic sources: federal, state, and local. In this current 24-27 TIP, 11% of the funding is from the state, 43% is local, and 46% is federal. Now, I have to put the note that the local amount or percentage may seem high, but that's because transit funding includes a local sales tax, and that is considered local funding in our TIP. What's really amazing is the split between transit and highway projects in this current TIP is 48% of the funding is allocated toward transit and 50% towards highway, and then 2% is allocated toward bike and pedestrian projects. Highway improvements are tables 2-3 and 2-4 in the TIP. Over $407 million is allocated to highway projects. And basically, highway projects are categorized into three different types: preservation, operational, and capacity. And by far, most of our money now in this TIP and in the previous TIPs have been spent toward preservation. Operational is the next is next in line, and then capacity is probably the amount that least amount of money. Or actually, operational is only 5% in this current TIP. Capacity is 11%, preservation is 84%. Actually, we only have two capacity projects, but unfortunately, those are big dollar projects, so it kind of bumps that percentage up. I just want to touch on table 2-4. Table 2-4 is called statewide group projects. These are projects that we have to show in our TIP. We don't have any direct Amex funding in these projects. Most of them are ODOT sponsored. They're projects that are not regionally significant, air quality exempt, non-capacity adding, and but they still have to be consistent with the Amex plan. And like I just mentioned, they're not funded with our funds. And many of these projects are ODOT projects, such as resurfacing and things like that that are done to state routes. And that is table 2-4 in the TIP. Table 2-3 is our projects or projects that our money has gone directly into, and then 2-4 are these statewide group projects. Transit projects, as previously shown, over $396 million are going toward transit projects. Metro and PARTA are the two transit operators that receive this. The money usually goes towards replacement of large and small buses. The latest trend now is electrified buses. Maintenance of equipment and facilities, and then coordinated human services, public transportation plan. And one last thing I wanted to touch on is A bigger part of our TIP now is performance measures. Tells you if the transportation system is getting better or worse in certain areas. And those areas that we do measure, if our safety, infrastructure, condition, congestion, system reliability, freight movement, environmental sustainability, and reduced project delivery delays. So the next step with our TIP is we're actually in a public comment period now between March 10th and April 10th. The final TIP will be submitted to ODOT May 1st. The final approval will be by the policy committee at our May meeting, May 18th. And then the approval of the final TIP by FHWA and FTA will be June 30th, and if all goes well, the new TIP will go into effect on July 1st of fiscal year 24. So that's just kind of a summary of the 24-27 TIP. If you have any questions, I'd be glad to try to answer them. I guess the TIP team in our office is, of course, Curtis, our director, Matt Stewart, our new administrator, myself, and then my co-worker, Amy Prater, done a tremendous amount of work putting it together. So if there's any questions, I'd be glad to answer them. There is a public meeting tonight at 6:30. It'll be sponsored by the by our CIC committee, and if any of you would like to join that, you're welcome to. I believe Carrie sent a link out. It's going to be a Zoom meeting, and I believe Carrie sent a link out to everyone last week. So I'd be glad to take any questions you might have. Yes.
Dave, I know you know this, with the current administration's emphasis on climate change and environmental justice, I wondered if that section in the environmental justice section in the TIP is different from past TIPs.
I don't know if it's so much different. It's been updated, and I didn't work directly with that. I worked more with the project tables. I didn't work directly with that a whole lot, but I wouldn't say it's different. I would say that it's just been updated with the current. Especially the EJ section has been updated with the most current census information.
Yeah, and if I can add just
a
little bit.
Please do.
So we did do some changes to how we perform environmental justice, and we added in, like, I know there have been several executive orders in 2021 which are kind of incorporated in the definitions of equity. And so, like, what Dave is saying is kind of correct. We definitely made some changes. It's not a revolutionary change, but I do think this next time around we're probably going to make even more changes to how we perform our environmental justice. But we did try to make it more meaningful and incorporate what the federal agencies have been telling MPOs to do.
Yeah, the parallel is I've seen with US EPA, they're putting emphasis on that, and sometimes the definitions of certain terms are a little slow in coming, so it's a kind of hard to understand what exactly an agency is supposed to do. But I just wondered.
And that absolutely was a challenge, is trying to get our hands on the meaning behind some of the new executive orders. There are a lot of things that have been, and I'll present in a second on Safe Streets for All, and just how we approach equity is definitely changing. And you're right, it's becoming a much bigger focus of all of the programs we do.
Thank you. Any other questions? All right, a motion is required to accept the draft 2024-27 Transportation Improvement Program.
Hadley, move.
Moore, second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor of accepting the draft transportation plan signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Moving on to item 5B, draft Safe Streets for All action plan for the greater Akron area. This is a discussion. Mr. Stewart.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
Very excited to be here presenting our draft plan. As most of you know, this is something that's been a pretty major effort in our office over the last 6 months or so. For anyone who's not aware or might be new to this committee, Safe Streets for All is a new federal discretionary program that allocates about $1 billion per year. And funding can go toward action plans, which is what we're doing in-house. But once you have an action plan in place, communities can apply for implementation grants. And so the whole objective of the program is really to reduce fatal and serious injury crashes. So I'm not going to go through and give Curtis is also going to be presenting, but we're not going to give a full chapter-by-chapter overview, but I did want to at least pick out some of the highlights. So like a lot of planning processes, we started with a lot of the engagement efforts. Those are detailed in Chapter 3. I think I talked about those at the last TAC meeting, but just as a refresh, we did do for our public engagement, we did an online survey, ended up with just over 300 responses, also got over 100 location-specific concerns. So we got a lot of good information that gave us a good baseline of how the public uses the system and how they perceive safety and the issues that they have as they move about our region. The other piece of that was stakeholder engagement, and for that we did our series of 6 focus groups. With our Safe Streets for All Task Force's help, we amassed a list of, I think it was over 70 stakeholders. And those stakeholders we invited to attend a series of focus groups. We got a lot of very good feedback from those. We'll be reaching out to that group again a little bit later in our process so that we can, once we have our draft a little bit more buttoned up, we'll reach out to them again to make sure we're kind of hitting the mark. One of the most important chapters of the plan is the safety analysis. And that chapter is really kind of divided into 2 components. The first half might look familiar to you. It's very similar to the annual crash reports that Dave and Amy work on. But I kind of like to think of it as like a crash report on steroids. So it's very similar. A lot of the details of how, when, why, where crashes are occurring across the region. This is looking at more metrics and over a longer period of time. So with Safe Streets for All, we had a 5-year window, and we really were focusing on fatal and serious injury crashes. Second part of that chapter is establishing a high injury network. And that is something that is right in the guidance for Safe Streets for All. As action plans are being developed, we're requested to develop a high injury network. And there's a lot of latitude on what that high injury network can look like. So we had a lot of back and forth with our task force and a lot of internal discussions and a couple of different ways of looking at this. But ultimately, what we landed on is kind of what you see here. And the main parameters to keep in mind is any segment or intersection where you have at least 3 total fatal or serious injury crashes, or 3 per mile. In addition, all of our pedestrian and bicycle FSI crashes are included within the high injury network. And what I think is probably going to be the most useful feature for all of you, and if you haven't had a chance to check it out, I strongly recommend you do. Our staff, Seth Bush here, put together a very impressive web application where all of you can go and get detailed information about any crash that has occurred in the region. So I'm not going to, I don't want to do a live demo, but just to give you kind of an idea, like if you go onto the screen, or if you go onto the web app, you'll see two icons in the top right. One of them displays a legend. And I just wanted to point out, you can also click like any segment or any whatever feature you have up on the web app, you can click that and get pop-up will come up that will give you more information on whatever you're looking at. I think there are 17 layers total in the web application, and I'll just walk you through a couple of those. So I mentioned before, the high injury network is made up of segments and intersections. So the first part of that is what we would consider our AMATS fundable roads, our collector routes, our arterials, all of the federal functionally classified roadways other than our highways. And so the different colors just correspond to how many FSI crashes have occurred. The interstate segments are also looked at. It's our regional interstate highway network as well as State Route 8, because that very much functions like an interstate. It does not include the Interbelt or Route 21 through, the Copley, Norton area. But all of our other major highways are part of that layer. And then finally, the same thing with intersections. But there are a couple other neat features that I just wanted to mention. I noted earlier that any fatal or serious injury pedestrian crashes count toward the high injury network. So when you pull up the pedestrian layer, you'll have all these squares that pop up. Each color square corresponds to a different type of crashes. The black is fatal, blue is serious injury, orange is minor injury, and yellow would be property damage only. So any of the blue or black squares would be considered the high injury. Same thing for bicycle crashes, just a slightly different symbology with the diamonds. And again, just like all the other features, you can click, like the graphic on the left shows, you can click on any of those segments and get all sorts of detailed information about the crash that occurred. What I think is one of the most powerful features of the web application, but is something that might get kind of buried beneath all the other stuff going on there, is you have the ability to zoom into any area within the region, within your community, and look at details of any crashes that have occurred, including like the more minor ones. And part of the reason this is important is because our color-coded maps with the different colored lines and stuff, they don't account for local routes. There was no easy and accurate way for us to do that. So if you have an issue in your municipality and say it's a local route, but you think, hey, there have been serious crashes here, if you have three blue or black stars within a mile, that would count toward the high injury network. So it just gives you that ability to really drill down what's going on in your area. Chapter 5 is our equity analysis, and I wasn't going to go into the details of this, but just wanted to say that there are layers on the web application that allow you to get detailed information on what's going on, like the demographics of the area. So the federal government is really behind this historically disadvantaged communities methodology, so I won't go into the details, but you can pull up where those qualifying census tracts are. And then our own equity maps, Seth was able to map out minority, elderly, low-income, disabled populations, as well as carless households. And then our analysis from that chapter kind of just looks at where crashes are occurring across the region and what the impacts are of each block group or census tract. So that's kind of an overview of how the web application and some of the chapters leading up to the recommendations, but like in a lot of planning efforts, the recommendations chapter is really the meat of everything. And Curtis is going to quickly go over some of the details of how we set that.
Yeah, so really briefly, you know, when we met with our task force, it was pretty clear that we were instructed to try to, you know, be as broad as possible with our recommendations, trying to take a big umbrella approach and make sure that we were identifying lots of different types of projects that would be eligible for Safe Streets for All funding. One of the challenges in there, though, however, is that there is very prescriptive guidance about what recommendations should look like in a Safe Streets for All project, including that there is a requirement that there are time periods, and there is sort of this allusion to, you know, needing to have real recommendations, not just the high injury network. And so staff worked really hard to try to come up with a way to sort of, I would say, have our cake and eat it too when it comes to this these recommendations. So the first of the short-term project recommendations, these are projects that everyone should be familiar with. They are already either existing on our TIP or are already funded by AMATS outside of the TIP, like 2028 potentially. So that's really where, that's really the shortest term recommendations are ones that are already funded. Here we even include the PID number. We wanted to make it as easy as possible for those projects if they needed additional funds that they could go after Safe Streets for All funding with that with those short-term projects. Matt, if you can go to the next slide. The midterm recommendations was, you know, so as Matt said, there were the minimum was 3 FSI per segment. So we tried to figure out a way to split mid-projects apart from long-term projects. And what we used was 10 FSIs on the corridor over the five-year period as the next break for what we would call midterm projects. With those projects, and you know, we didn't really know this until we started jumping into the data, is that, you know, every FSI level that you pick, you get more and more projects to the point of almost like unreasonableness of you're saying, well, isn't it the whole network? So with those 10, we found a sweet spot where we thought it was an appropriate amount of recommendations, and we wanted to give it a little bit more teeth than just saying this is a highway injury, it was part of the network. So that's where what came in was the possible federal highway proven safety countermeasures. There are, I believe, 28 or so proven countermeasures. What Matt, God bless him, did was go through every single one of them, look at them on an aerial, use the street view, and just try to grab safety measures that he thought would be appropriate for that corridor. We know that they may not be. And one of the things we're asking our technical advisory committee to do is look at that list of projects, especially in the midterm, look at highway injury network locations, and let us know and give us feedback of like, hey, we're never going to do that, or could we try something else, or put something more specific in, et cetera. So we really are, and I think Matt, when he sent the email out with the document, kind of emphasized that. We need that feedback to get this to the next step. And then on the third, which is the long-term recommendations, that basically is everything from 3 to 10 FSIs a corridor. There are over 600 segments listed on that long-term report. I do seriously think we, and probably will take this question back to the task force, but also to the whole, the committee of the whole, is that, you know, is the 3 cutoff really the appropriate place to list recommendations based on the number of recommendations we have? So in the long-term recommendations, we really are just showing listed by number of FSIs, the FSI corridor, what the, you know, from basically this segment from here to here, and that's considered a long-term recommendation. So when you actually look at the table, which I know it's only 47 pages, but when you actually look at it, it's on 11 by 17. So this is a 100-page, it's a 100-page document, but the table of long-term recommendations goes on and on and on. And my only concern as we prepare this is, are the feds going to look at this and think we are trying to do some type of money grab, or, you know, some type where we're trying to get everything under the sun? So that is something I would also like people to think about in this next 6 weeks that we're thinking about, that has, I guess, given staff a little bit of heartburn when it comes to the recommendations. But again, I would say that until we actually went through the process of figuring out how many segments were actually on this list, we really didn't know until we knew, until it spit everything out. And so that's how we've tried to organize things and put them together and make recommendations. I will guarantee you that every single one of these communities has a high entry corridor that in their area of jurisdiction, because there are so many. And quite frankly, there just are a lot of FSI crashes in our region. And then moving on, the next piece is the non-project recommendation. So we're also required to have recommendations that, I don't want to call them more fluff, but are more about, hey, what are these, what are programs and things that we can do to maybe encourage people to be safer? And we use Ohio's Strategic Highway Safety Plan as sort of our benchmark guide of recommendations. And we grabbed ones that they looked at that we thought were germane to sort of what we do on a regional level. We divided them up by speed, distracted driving, impairment, seatbelts, motorcycles, bike and ped, and railroad crossings. Part of that was just looking at what our mix of FSI crashes were and what things we thought really hit those spots. So, again, this is definitely one of those plans where by no means is this the rubber stamp for this committee and for policy. You know, we really could use your help now taking it to the next level and helping us refine it a little bit more with your suggestions or just feedback on what your local community reactions to these midterm, long-term recommendations. So I guess then, Matt, I'll turn it back over to you.
Yeah, so, yeah, as far as next steps go, like Curtis said, we're asking each of you to take a look. It's pretty prominently placed on our website. I know the link was sent out late. Yeah, I think it was, I don't know. The days are blurring together, but a couple days ago it was sent out to all of you. And we're just asking for your comments. Like Curtis said, we're even kind of changing things. Like there were so many things that even as we had each chapter done and it went through our internal review process, we kept saying, what about this? What about that? And so there are some things that we want to button up. There are also some things that just haven't occurred yet in the planning process. So there will be changes to this document. And there's plenty of opportunity for that. Our next steps are going to be to meet with our Safe Streets for All task force. That's probably going to happen in very early April. No date is set yet. And then kind of as comments from you come in and as comments from our task force come in, we'll be looking to modify that document to get it to the point where we can bring it before our stakeholder group again. And then kind of the next deadline to think about is we'll be asking for our policy committee to do final approval of this action plan on May 18th. Slightly before that happens, the guidance is saying it's probably going to come out in April. My guess would be that's very late April or maybe even into May. They'll announce year two funding. The goal of this and kind of that's why it's been sort of such a major initiative here at AMATS is because we wanted to have this action plan wrapped up before or, you know, as the year two funding is coming out. Because there is going to be an opportunity for communities to apply for implementation grants. And this is really just, I guess you could call it an educated guess, but I think this is a really good opportunity right now because not very many areas have action plans yet. So there's probably not going to be nearly as much competition for the implementation grant money in year two. So I would, if I had to guess, I would say the odds of getting a grant are probably much higher now than they will be a year from now. Because I think since we met last time, the federal government announced the year one awards, and there were just such a long list of action plan grants. So a whole bunch of MPOs and communities are going to be doing what we just did. So we're a little ahead of the process. So with that, that's kind of where we are now. Curtis or I or any of the other staff would be happy to answer any questions. And I guess I would be remiss. Like, our staff has worked so hard on this. I've been really impressed with just this whole process, and the folks here put a lot of hard work into this. So are there any questions? Okay.
I have two clarification questions. Maybe I'm not catching it right. When you talked about it, we could drill down to the local level. Are those local level also eligible for the project funding that's coming out?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And then the three used for the number that you used, was that a federal requirement, or is that what you started?
No. Yeah, that's what we had a lot of back and forth on, what should be our threshold. And our, just to kind of generalize, I think our task force wanted to keep it fairly open-ended and inclusive. Some other areas are doing, you know, like five FSIs or something, but we thought three, at least initially, was maybe a good basis.
Thank you.
Sure. Yes.
In terms of trying to cut down on the masses number of projects, could AMETS look at local commitment, something more than the minimum? You know, a couple communities say this is a real problem, we're going to put some of our own money into it, or a county and a community. Is that a way? It wouldn't be a requirement, but a permissive way of, you know, trying to sift through all the projects and come up with something that might be a little more reasonable on a list.
I think. Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think the challenge is that when we're looking at those long-term recommendations, you know, the projects that are in the short term are the ones that we know communities have already invested in. So there are all of the ones that we're looking at in the long term most likely have not been considered by anyone. So because they're on the lower, you know, they're the lower threshold. So what we'd actually like to know is that if a community sees one of those lower ones on the list that they are doing work on, we'd like to know that, because we'd actually then want to push it up the list, you know, to midterm or, you know. But, you know, it's sort of more of a product of just because it's based on, it's just based and built on a data set that's just how many segments there are with FSIs. You know, we're not really doing it at a project level. It's really based on, you know, what our segment length is, and that's why there's so many. You know, if the segments were longer, we'd have fewer number of projects. But so it's, I don't know if that would be the best way, because I just don't get the sense that a lot of those 600 have had a lot of investment in them. I think what we have to decide as a group is, you know, does it make sense? I think the most practical thing is, do we bump the number from 3 to 5, or, you know, 5 to 7, or I think that's probably where we're going to have to go if we think it's a big enough issue that we want to change it.
The other comment I had, I think I had this when the program was first announced. There are no funds for hiring additional police if speed is recognized as a problem, something other than educational materials for enforcement. Now, I guess it could be speed cameras, but I'm not advocating that. But just asking.
Yeah, I mean, I know my impression is that it can do things outside the realm of just your, you know, like a typical infrastructure project. But I don't think it would go as far as, say, hiring security forces or anything like that. And at this point too, the two types of recommendations we've seen are action plans or corridor projects, essentially, or City of Detroit gets $28 million for their whole region to put in rapid flashing beacons and mid-block crossings, where maybe the location wasn't specifically identified, but, you know, they're going to go through a process post getting the award and pick which ones are going to get the grant. But I don't think we saw anything that looked at, like, kind of that more operating speed enforcement, buying radar equipment, things like that.
Yeah, most of them were, the vast majority were, you know, single corridors or, like, a couple of corridors within a city that they were going to do, like, a full, you know, modernization of this corridor. But the thing that's interesting is there were so few implementation grants awarded in year one, because so few people have completed action plans, and you need to have the action plan to do the implementation grant. But it was kind of eye-opening to see the types of projects that, at least in year one, they were putting money toward. I've been wondering all along about some of those other non-project things, like what we're calling the strategies in our report, like what would a package of those look like? And unfortunately, we don't have a great answer yet because there's not a lot of precedent. Okay. Well, thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Matt. It certainly was a big effort, so if everybody here can take a moment to look at the... is it a web link, Matt?
Yes. Yeah, and that was sent out the other day, but if you go just to AMAT's webpage, I think it's the first slider that pops up, right? So it's pretty prominent on our webpage. And the draft report is there, and the web application is also there.
Great. All right, moving on to item six, resolutions. Resolution 2023-03, amending the fiscal year 2023 transportation planning work program and budget to include the development of the 2050 planning data forecast. Mr. Baker.
All right, thank you. So I know we're all still in shock that we're here past 2 o'clock, so I'm going to be real brief. So AMETS is planning, when you approved the draft work program for 2024, AMETS was planning on doing the planning data forecast. ODOT informed us that actually we could hire someone off their statewide planning contract, and we could do it earlier in the fiscal year, so do it in 23. But our work program in 2023 hadn't accounted for that. So this is really just a resolution that says, as part of our 23 work program, we're amending it to say we will complete the planning data forecast. That allows us to get started on it earlier, whereas we were planning on starting it after July, but now we're going to try to get it started earlier. So it doesn't change the funding, doesn't change amounts or local shares or anything like that. It's just kind of procedural to allow ODOT to open up that statewide contract for us to get on. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
All right, we need a motion to pass resolution 2023-03.
So moved.
Olin second.
Olin second. Ambitious. Thank you both. We have a motion.
Outside.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. Any other business?
There is no other business.
Before I adjourn, I would encourage all of you to take a look at Cranes Magazine. Yes, exactly. Curtis did a great job representing our AMATS region, and overall, really good article. But thank you, Curtis, for doing that. All right. All right, me's adjourned.